Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today a true accounting legend. It's Damien Greathead. Hello, sir.
Yeah, Rob, a legend might be overselling, I think, but thank you very much. Wonderful to be here.
Well, great to have you. And Damien, some people may not know who you are. Just tell us a bit about your journey and what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. So first job out of college, I worked with this guy called Rick Payne, and he was an absolute powerhouse in terms of thought leadership in the accounting profession. He worked with Paul Dunn very early on with the accountants boot camps, the resultant accountant systems, and then he went on to found Principa. And through him, I learned an enormous amount about the accounting industry, the challenges facing it in terms of changing client expectations, the pressure on compliance-based fees, and also the changing role of an accountant, the willingness for accountants to get into this advisory space while not actually knowing what advisory was at Principa, and learned an enormous amount. Got exposed to the likes of Paul Dunn and Ron Baker and their value pricing and Firm of the Future type themes. Then partnered with a guy called Chris Fredrickson from the 2020 group. And again, moved more into the actual accounting practice focused management of an accounting practice. Through no fault of my own, I actually did some accounting, tax returns, bookkeeping. And I did the advisory. I wasn't very good at the tax. I was okay at the bookkeeping, but I really loved the advisory. Getting the clients to understand the numbers, that was really exciting. But also one of the business units that Chris and I set up was 2020 Group, which was a membership organization for accounting firms, small and medium-sized accounting firms that didn't really have the same resources and network that larger regional, national, global firms had. So we would help one partner to, say, four partner firms about the latest technology in the accounting space, different marketing methodologies, buy-sell merge agreements, succession planning, and helping accounting firms transition from fairly compliance-based to much more rounded businesses rather than just the tax and compliance. We also consulted to a lot of technology companies that were either US and wanted to get an accountants channel up and running, or alternatively were an accounting product outside of the US but wanted to come into the US market. So that's how we met firms like Xero, Expertax, and XCM in the United States, First Global Financial Planning, and a little company called Receipt Bank as well. to round it out, 5 years later, VP of Accountants Programs, Business Development, and Partner Marketing at Receipt Bank, helping accounting partners realize and enjoy the benefits of Receipt Bank, like we did in our accounting firm, and like I've seen so many firms around the world really embrace the technology and the positive impact that it's had on their firm and their clients. So a bit of a long-winded answer, but that's how I got here today, Rob.
Yeah, that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much. Well, there's so much I want to unpack with you, Damien. You've got a very colourful background and you dropped some heavyweight names of true accounting legends there. So yes, it's great to hear that. So let me ask you, what kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession is in generally these days?
I think accounting is a phenomenal place to be in. Those firms that are embracing it and stepping away from that traditional silo compliance-based model with those hourly fees and the once-a-year type products, those ones that are shifting away from that to becoming bookkeeping powerhouses, payroll powerhouses, or going into that part-time controller, CFO, advisory, whatever that might mean to the firm. So I think it's a really exciting time to be in the industry. Around the world, legislation is on the accounting profession side as well in terms of pushing technology adoption. So I think it's a really exciting time for those ones that embrace the change and embrace the opportunity. And I think some are just sticking their head in the sand, whereas probably the top 30% of firms around the world are growing far more quickly than the industry average because they have decided to shift the traditional model and turn it on its head.
Yeah, you bring up a good point there about change. How well do you feel accountants cope with change as a species? Because there's a lot of it going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a lot of it going on. And we sometimes think of accountants as being quite reserved, quite conservative, resistant to change. I think people generally are resistant to change, but it's momentum. Once you take that first step, the second step, and you step out of your comfort zone and you talk to your client about a new piece of technology, or you talk to your client about, hey, I want to change the way we price our services so that it's better for your cash flow, for example. The small steps happen quite quickly thereafter, but more often than not, it's that fear of taking the first step that probably holds us back. But once they do take that step, have that conversation with the client, 9 times out of 10, we start to get a bit of momentum.
What do you feel makes the good accounting firms great, Damien?
I learned from this guy called Chad Davis, Live CA. He's out of Canada. Experimentation, a willingness to experiment and a willingness to iterate. This idea of same as last year, I think that is what holds back the accounting profession. Whereas those truly great ones are willing to sit down and look at how do we change? How do we iterate? We don't need to make drastic changes, but what are the improvements? One thing I learned from Chad, who I think learned from Ron Baker, was the after action review. Sitting down after the tax return, after the bookkeeping engagement, after the consulting gig, to sit with the team and say, what did we do well? What didn't we do well? Anything fall through the cracks? And what are we going to do different next time? And being able to do that each and every engagement means that we can constantly improve. So that commitment to the constant and never-ending improvement, I think, is what separates the good from great, so to speak.
Yeah, I love that. And in terms of accountants, it's not what it used to be. Are we seeing a new breed of accountants? Are they having to change to cope with what's coming up?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. We are seeing a rise of these smaller, quite nimble virtual firms that don't necessarily have the bricks and mortar of the traditional firm. They're recruiting team members from around the world. They're embracing this idea of outsourcing and offshoring and tapping into a global workforce. They don't necessarily need that same face-to-face. They're happy having a Zoom call with clients. Some of them have never met their clients in person. And I think that's exciting as well because it allows them to specialize. And that traditional accounting firm was the generalist to the businesses within a 50-mile radius. Whereas the firms that we're seeing spring up today, they're breaking out of that mold. They're specializing in creative agencies, specializing in dental practices, but just specializing. And they're able to recruit clients, staff from around the world. I go back to Chad Davis. He doesn't have an office. And in 5 years, he's grown to 60 people across Canada in a profession where we constantly hear finding and keeping good quality people is one of the biggest challenges. Firms like his and Connect CPA, Zen Accounting, their inbox is overflowing with resumes. That's what I'm seeing.
Fascinating stuff. What do you feel the biggest challenges are that accounting firms face, particularly if they want to grow?
One of the biggest challenges for accounting firms is they're making good money. So there's not really that emphasis to change.
What do you mean, complacency?
A little bit of complacency, yeah. Because if you look at the different surveys from associations around the world, partners in accounting firms are making some pretty good money. So why change? Why upset the status quo? So I think that's one of the biggest challenges in terms of growth. Because if we do want to change something in the firm, typically we're going to have to take it from somewhere in terms of resources from somewhere to focus our attention and energy. And that typically, again, from an accounting partner's firm, that comes from my pocket. And so I think that's one of the big challenges. How do we balance what I need to get from the business today with what I want it to produce in the future? And I'm not quite sure if we've done a good job helping accountants in that sort of area.
Mm. Now, as Receipt Bank, the tech firm that you are, it's not just about the software and the platforms you offer. It's the education you give to your customers. What frustrations do you have with the whole world of technology and the way that's adopted in firms?
What I'm seeing, Rob, is certain firms and those ones that are growing fastest, they've adopted the technology, but not only that, they've adapted their workflow. And whether it's Receipt Bank, whether it's Xero, whether it's QuickBooks Online, they've changed the way in which they work. Whereas I see a lot of firms slap in some new technology, but then don't actually change the underlying ways in which information goes through the firm and the way they work. I see a lot of situations where accounting firms aren't enabling a bank feed in, say, Xero or QuickBooks Online. So right there, we're missing out on a huge efficiency gain. Receipt Bank and QBO work really well when we're processing data on the regular, whereas the old accounting system was that the shoebox or the envelope of stuff would come in maybe once or twice a month. It'd sit in a folder, and then according to the schedule, somebody would come over and pick up that folder, pick up the in-tray, and then get to work processing everything. Whereas with Receipt Bank and a QBO bank feed, we should be processing data every day or every other day, at bare minimum once a week. And so if, for example, we're halfway through the month, we've got half of the bookkeeping already done. 3/4 of the way through the month, we've got 3/4 of the bookkeeping done. And at the end of the month, we've only got a very small amount of bookkeeping that needs to be taken care of, which means that by about the 3rd, 4th of the next month, the books are closed, the reports are done, the management reports are in the client's hands, and the client can do something with that. So the firms have changed the way in which they receive information and process it throughout the course of the month. Whereas still today, bookkeeping is a once a month process. And as a result of that, benefits that I see, they're not realized because we're using new technology, but old workflows. Mm. So that's just a very simple example of where our education needs to focus on. So the workflow is one thing, but even the way in which we compensate our people, because for example, the receipt bank going into the general ledger is going to save time. The business owners, the partners, they get that, they love that, but the team is most likely being compensated by the hour or KPI'd on billable hours. Mm. So there's a disconnect there. Again, we've got new technology, but old ways of doing things, whether that's workflow, whether that's the way we compensate our people. So those fundamental organizational things have to change so as to realize the benefits of the technology.
Yeah. You had to mention the billable hour there. So we've got to bring up the subject of pricing. Where do you stand on the whole value pricing, fixed pricing debate, Damien?
Robert, it's a spectrum. Value pricing, I learned this from Bob Wang. He's out of Vancouver, Canada. He said to me, Damien, I wanted to get into value pricing, but I couldn't because it meant that I had to sit down with every single client, find out what they valued, and then have this dance, if you will, to work out what their value package was. So he said he wanted to get there, but he couldn't. And that was our experience as well in our accounting firm, is that all of these proposals sat on our desks piling up, waiting for us to have the one-to-one conversations with our clients. So we went with fixed pricing. We did some time and motion studies in our accounting firm. We worked out how long it took to do certain parts of the tax return. We learned how long it took to do all the parts of the bookkeeping process, from reconciliation to accounts payable to payroll, so that we could do cost accounting of accounting. We knew what our costs were to deliver the engagement, and then we marked it up for our margin. So I'm a big proponent of fixed pricing because I think that's scalable. Value pricing, it's very difficult to master, and I think that that's probably one thing that holds people back from it. So let's go with something a little bit more scientific, a little bit more mathematic, which is fixed pricing based on cost accounting.
Yeah, you make a very strong argument. It's so much less subjective, isn't it? Talk to us about compliance versus advisory. Is compliance really dead, Damien? Just open your heart on that one.
No, compliance isn't dead. Just because the tax code is constantly changing, it's constantly evolving. So keeping people compliant is an incredibly valuable part of the process. And truth be told, it's the perfect foot in the door. So I think accountants can have a phenomenal role to play in helping their clients sleep better at night on a couple of fronts. First is keeping them compliant, making sure that they stay out of trouble with the tax authorities. The other one is making sure that their internal controls are up to speed and they're guarded against fraud and being disaster ready. So making sure that in the event of theft or fire or flood or whatever, all the financial records are easily at your fingertips. So these types of things, which I sort of put in the compliance bucket, I think they help our clients sleep soundly at night and then open the door for whatever advisory entails. The key thing, Rob, is it's up to the accounting firm to define what advisory services mean for them. And I was talking to one firm and she said, our advisory services, we focus on back office automation. We don't get into KPIs. We don't get into dashboards. We don't do any of that. We partner with someone to do that. Fantastic. Another firm said that their advisory stops at a controller type service. So you take the accounts into management accounts. We do some budget versus actual. We do some dashboards. We do some general controller type meetings every quarter, but that's where we stop. That was a real takeaway for me, is it's up to the accounting firm to define advisory and shape what the advisory experience means for their clients, and then partner with the appropriate people to provide other areas, whether that's financial planning, whether that's insurances, et cetera, et cetera. So compliance, not dead at all, and it opens the door to much more valuable, interesting conversations.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And there's so many different levels of advisory, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's this massive umbrella. Every conference you go, it says you've got to get into advisory, you've got to get into advisory. Mm. But very few sessions actually define what is advisory. And we go back to education. That's where there's a bit of a gap to provide examples of what are very specific advisory services that accounting firms can implement. And not just, hey, here are some names of some services, but how do you implement them? What are the tools you need? How do you market it? How do you sell it? How do you price it? That's where the gap in education is the practical how-to once we've defined what an advisory service is.
Yeah, it's very good. Now, I know you've got a passion and an interest in marketing, Damien. When you look at accounting firms and you talk to them all day long, how do accounting firms stand out? And what are the good ones doing in how they're marketing and doing business development?
Robo, I don't think I've coined this phrase. Everyone rags on accountants for being terrible salespeople. And most accountants say, well, I went into accounting, so I don't have to do sales. Yeah. But what I've found is accountants are phenomenal salespeople. When they sit opposite their client and they talk about what's keeping them up at night, what's happening in their business, business. They always walk away with new work, with new business. So they're phenomenal salespeople, may not be great at pricing and might be leaving some value on the table, but that's a different conversation. So great salespeople might not be pricing it, might be leaving some money on the table, but they're shocking marketers. More often than not, they're so nose to the grindstone doing the work that they don't have the time to sit back and create the opportunities, facilitate the opportunities to sit in front of clients, talk about what's keeping them up at night, to think about marketing strategically rather than, oh, I've got a bit of capacity which I need to fill. So what I'm seeing the best firms do, whether they're small firms, large firms, they're looking to leverage content. And what I mean by that is accountants are constantly getting bombarded with questions from their clients. And the best firms are looking at all these questions that are coming in from their clients and then creating content from that. So frequently asked questions, top 10 tips for year end, how do I manage my expenses? What's claimable? What's not claimable? These are the types of questions that we're getting every day. And rather than trying to answer every single question, what they're doing is they're creating content around answering those questions that is much more leveraged. Andrew Wall up in Toronto, he did a webinar on fraud prevention and internal controls. He's posted that to his Facebook page and his website. Through Facebook, it's got 2,900 views. Not suggesting he's got 2,900 phone calls, but that's working for him in the evening. That's working for him at the weekends. Ryan Lozanis created blog posts. Carla Caldwell, she answers those frequently asked questions. And the best thing about that is prospective clients can find that in the evenings, at the weekends, which is when the business owner actually has time to sit down and think about things and do some research and quest more information or schedule a calls. They're getting those requests over the weekends, in the evenings. So they've got marketing working for them 24/7.
Yeah.
Not rocket science, but it's a consistent message and it's there available to be found by prospective clients. And these guys are getting inbound traffic from all over the world. They've then got systems in place to screen, but they're not thinking about marketing as an activity that I do when I have capacity. Instead, it's something that's happening 24/7, but more importantly, an incredibly leveraged and cost-effective manner.
Yeah, that's very good. Do you see yourself as a comforter and a handholder, Damien, or are you more of a challenger and a disruptor in your role?
I think I started out being a comforter and a handholder, whereas now I'm, come on, folks, we've been banging this drum for quite some time, and we've got some people out front that have led the way. The water is warm. Come on in.
Yeah.
And actually, and if you don't want to, that's fine, but stop talking about it. I remember at Principa in 2020 and Receipt Bank, I get this, it's not you, it's me. When someone breaks up with you, stops using your services. Again, you don't have to make massive leaps, little steps, small changes, and you'll look back in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and you'll be blown away by how far you've come. Someone puts a target on the door and says, let's go for it, and I'm in. If people aren't willing to take the first step, there is an enormous amount of opportunity in accounting and in small business accountants to help their business clients. So let's just get on with it.
Yeah. I've got to ask you what you feel's coming up over the next few years for the accounting world.
Tough question. There's a lot of emphasis on machine learning and artificial intelligence, blockchain and cryptocurrency and all that type of stuff. I think let's get what we've got implemented. Let's focus on our core offering and let's get less distracted from the bells and whistles that are out there. Fundamentally, what's keeping our clients up at night is making sure they are compliant, is making sure they've got cash at bank to make payroll. And then how do we make this business grow in what is a quite challenging business environment? I mean, you look at the high street and small, medium-sized business and shop fronts have been impacted by Amazon, for example. That's got to be keeping a lot of business owners up at night, and helping clients navigate that change really is where firms can focus and should focus, and then finding the tools that help them do that. Blockchain, cryptocurrency, it'll come. Keep an eye on it, but focus on the fundamentals that are keeping your clients up at night.
Yeah, that's very good. Damien, if people want to have a conversation with you, pick your brains a little bit, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Probably LinkedIn. So there's not too many Damien Greatheads in the world. So you'll be able to find me quite easily. I'd be delighted to share some insight or what we're seeing, or alternatively, connect you to other firms who are doing, I think, some really interesting things.
Yeah. And finally, Damien, this has been terrific. Have you got a personal philosophy for success or some advice for the accounting people listening that can help them navigate these turbulent waters of change?
Well, you talk about turbulent waters. I've swum from Alcatraz a couple of times. I've run the New York Marathon. I've done Ironman triathlons. Normally, halfway through these particular events, you sort of have this minute of thinking, why on earth did I sign up for this? Why on earth did I pay pretty significant money to do this? But then it's a realization of like, you know what? We're here and there's not much we can do. So let's just crack on. And actually, swimming from Alcatraz can take 30 minutes or it can take 60 minutes, depending on the currents. But then also what you've got to do, particularly swimming from Alcatraz, you've got to align yourself on a regular basis with your target. You set a target, and that was to get to a finish line. That was to swim from Alcatraz. That was to do an Ironman triathlon. We put the training and the plan in place. And then once we actually get to that start line, you've got to adjust. You've got to readjust. You've got to adjust your strategy and adjust your expectations, and then strategize around how we're going to get to that finish line as efficiently as possible. So my philosophy is jump in, follow the training plan, but then be constantly monitoring your progress towards that finish line and adjust accordingly.
That's great. Damien Greyhead, that's been world class. Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, Rob. I really enjoyed chatting. Thank you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.